All right, here we go. All the stuff we haven't talked about yet. Hey, John, Chris Haynes from Yahoo was at the Lakers scrimmage with Washington yesterday. He made the observation that the Lakers bench, the Lakers players, are just louder than everybody else. They're enthusiastic, they like each other, they entertain each other, and they're genuinely having fun. What role does that play in the Lakers winning the title in October?
Well, it doesn't hurt if you have that type of camaraderie, but they were like that, Mace, before the Kobe tragedy.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And I think when the Kobe tragedy hit, it brought them even closer together. When they go out, I've been traveling with teams for 20 years. When they go out, you never see one or two go out. They go out in packs of 8, 10, 12 guys, including LeBron and AD. And so I think Caruso didn't go to his sister's wedding. This is just me speculating, because he didn't want to let the other guys down. People are saying, well, because of the championship was too important, whatever. I really think he feels like these guys are in this brotherhood on this championship mission together, and he thought, this is an opportunity to show these guys how much I care, and I'm not going to go. And in the meantime, Lou Williams went to Magic City to get,
wings.
So it doesn't mean the Clippers aren't going to win. They have Kawhi, and he's a Terminator, but it tests your theory all the time. You always say culture means something.
Culture. I was just going to say culture and chemistry. I think absolutely means something.
I'll tell you what. If the Lakers win it all, I will give you credit for that. But if they lose, doesn't it prove that, you can go to Magic City and get wings and get suspended for 10 days and leave the bubble whenever you want? It really doesn't matter. The best players win.
It does. I mean, if Kawhi wins this thing,
these two theories.
If Kawhi wins this thing, it will mean it's not a culture thing. It's not a chemistry thing, because they're a very disjointed team, and they've only played together. John, you said earlier today, how many times have
10 times? They're 9-1 when they have their whole team.
Right. So they haven't played together as much as the Lakers. I just think that chemistry and that fun is going to play a huge role in the Lakers winning in October.
All right, mates, Patriots three-time Super Bowl champ and Pro Bowl linebacker Dante Hightower is opting out of the 2020 season. He's one of six Patriots who have decided to opt out. Hightower is scheduled to make $8 million in base salary. He had a baby on July 16th. By the way, New England has now lost Jamie Collins and Kyle Van Noy in free agency. Now Hightower to go along with offensive lineman Marcus Cannon and star defender Patrick Chung, who also opted out. Football is the one sport that I think I might opt out of if I were a player. I think I would play any other sport, but I'm not sure I would play football in the COVID-19 world. How about you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out, and some people have already sort of pointed this out on Twitter, is it possible that this is all a Bill Belichick mastermind trick?
Well, you know how I love conspiracy theories.
That Bill Belichick...
Do you mean that they get everybody to opt out, they tank the season and draft Trevor Lawrence to play quarterback?
Bingo. Ding, ding, ding.
I don't think
that's impossible.
Yeah, could be.
But the other part of your, not to dodge the other part of your question, but what was the other part of your question?
How about you? Would you opt out if you were a football player?
I'm opting out. I'm absolutely opting out.
It's the one sport that you can't social distance, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, no, your job is to eliminate any social distance, any physical distance between you and the other guy. I'm not sure how the NFL is going to work. I have a huge confidence in the NBA. I have some confidence in baseball guiding their way through this thing. My lowest degree of confidence is college football. But the NFL is next. I just think football doesn't lend itself to social distancing and playing in this age of the coronavirus. All right, NBA ballots for all the awards, including all NBA teams, are due tonight. Kawhi Leonard is expected by most to be a first teamer. Now, Kawhi averaged 27-6-5, two steals, but he only played 51 games. The Clippers have played 64. It means he's missed 21% of the season, and the games he's missed are because of load management. Now, my all-NBA first team does not include Kawhi.
All right, who do you got?
It's Luka, Harden, LeBron, Giannis, and AD. Those are my five.
Mm-hmm.
Does Kawhi deserve a spot on the All-NBA first team given the way he's approached the season?
Great question. But because he's the undisputed leader of the Clippers and the Clippers finish with a better record than the Rockets, I would lean...
You would put him in over Harden.
I would lean Kawhi over Harden.
Because yeah. It came down to Luka or Kawhi.
For me, Luka's in.
By the way, you know what's weird about that is I was listening to something today, and the voters all have kind of a pull-down ballot. I'm going to vote for this guy for guard, this guy for forward, this guy for center, et cetera. Mm-hmm. LeBron appears both as a guard and as a forward.
I think because basketball has become somewhat positionless, you just pick the best five
guys.
Yeah,
forget that. Just pick five guys. The position doesn't matter anymore. Just pick five guys. So John,
here's the guys. Like you talked about James Harden. Harden played 61 games this year, and Kawhi played 51. So Kawhi played 10 less games than Harden. But Kawhi had a better record, and I would argue that Kawhi plays both sides of the ball where Harden does not. Harden led the NBA in scoring, but he's going to lead the NBA in scoring almost every year, but he doesn't necessarily play any defense. And because Houston had a worse record than the Clippers, I would put Kawhi ahead of Harden. But I don't blame you. Harden's a great player. I also would have liked you, man, maybe you did, would like to have seen Damian Lillard get some consideration for first team, but the Blazers right now aren't even in the playoffs.
Yeah, you got to figure team performance. And granted, they were devastated by injuries, which is one of the reasons why they're not in the top eight, and that's not Dame's fault. But because of the team's overall performance, I think he's a second teamer. By the way, Luka, interestingly, because of injury, played only 54 games. Kawhi played 51. Luka played 54.
Right. AD only played 55.
55.
Yeah. You know, I think anybody who played more than 50 games should be considered for All-NBA. I think,
and you would or would not put Kawhi on your first team?
I would. The only difference between my team and your team is I would move Harden to the second team and put Kawhi on the first team.
Got it.
But other than that, I liked your team. I think you nailed four out of the five of them. And
In my opinion, I nailed five out of the five, but you're entitled to yours.
Yeah. And I think some people will agree with you that Kawhi, by not playing in back-to-backs, is somehow less than.
Yep.
All right, Mace. This according to the New York Times. Last Thursday, President Trump said this about throwing out the first pitch at a Yankees game this year. Quote, Randy Levine is a great friend of mine from the Yankees, referring to the Yankees team president. So then Trump went on to say, and he asked me to throw out the first pitch, and I think I'm going to do that on August 15th at Yankee Stadium. End quote. One problem with this. President Trump had not actually been invited on that day by the Yankees, according to one person with knowledge of his schedule.
And by the way, then he weirdly backed out of the invitation.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Okay. His announcement surprised both the Yankees and the White House staff. He eventually had to cancel the appearance, which was weird because there never was an appearance. Okay, but it got me to thinking.
Yes.
Could you or anybody use this tactic to get something you really want? For example, you've always said you really want a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
And I absolutely do.
Okay, if you came out today and posted on social media, quote, I want to thank the Hollywood Walk of Fame committee for recognizing me with a star. I'm really looking forward to it, but due to the coronavirus, I'll have to wait until it's appropriate. End quote. Now, would that generate a buzz that would actually get you the star? Or if you wanted to, like, sit in with J.B. Long doing a Rams game this year.
Yeah.
Just put that out there. I want to thank the Rams for inviting me to sit in with J.B. Long and Maurice Jones-Drew on the Ram game, and I look forward to doing it soon. Is that a strategy that can work?
You know, it's sort of like the LeVar Ball strategy, right?
You're going to will it into existence.
Speak it into existence.
I'm undefeated. Never lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing is weird, but I mean, everything that's happening at that level of the world, at that level of the country is weird right now. Here is my question that relates to that. So, obviously, he didn't get the invitation, then he backed out from the invitation he didn't get. Why do you think he backed out?
Well, because he had no other play. The Yankees weren't going to have him. What happens on August 15th when he's not there to throw it out? Yeah, you know, and
he's he will be the first president, if he doesn't do it before the election, and if he's not reelected, he will be the first president since Robert Taft to not throw out the first pitch at a Major League Baseball game. Not just opening day, at any Major League Baseball game.
Right, but he's so polarizing, and politics are so polarizing, that any politician to throw out the first pitch would be booed.
But every president has done it all the way back to Taft.
Yeah, this is like no president, as you know and often talk about, this is like no president we've ever had. There's nothing been anything like this. And frankly, Mace, I think it is somewhere rooted in the fact that he was mad that the Nationals asked Dr. Fauci. I think he was jealous.
I think your theory is completely and totally correct.
and he goes, oh, I'll put out a first pitch story. And then he went, oh, they didn't ask me.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's exactly what happened.
But don't you agree with me that he won't throw out a first pitch before the election?
No, he will not.
If he wins, maybe he quietly rectifies it in his second term.
Part of me thinks he looked at Fauci in that terrible opening pitch and thought, oh, that's the last thing I'm going to do. Well, I'm not good enough at throwing to throw out a first pitch, and I don't want to be embarrassed the way Fauci was.
Or I think the opposite. I think, you know, he's kind of a master media manipulator.
Yep.
I think he thought, I'm going to put this first pitch issue on the front burner. I'm going to go out and throw a first pitch down the middle, and then people will see that I'm right and Fauci's wrong, which is a completely convoluted attitude. But you wouldn't put that past him, would you?
No, absolutely. Well, at this point, I wouldn't put anything past him. Hey, quick update, and we've got Aldin Gonzalez, Dodgers beat writer for ESPN, coming up next. Dodgers versus Astros tonight at 6:10. John, our podcast that you and I did, Culture Pop podcast,
how's it doing so far?
First day, biggest number of downloads we've ever had in a day for the Culture Pop podcast.
And
so huge performance.
I didn't see you tweet out a link to it, did you?
I did yesterday. Tweet out a link, yeah.
Okay, I'll retweet it.
Retweet that. And you can get it at stevemason.com. You can subscribe on iTunes or on Spotify. There's a whole bunch of good stuff there. But the Ireland Interviewing Me podcast is generating raves on my Twitter. And I keep getting tweets like, I can't believe you said. And
blank.
What about that thing you said at the end? There's a lot of people saying that, too. That thing you said about what we talked about.
We're gonna have an announcement about that on Thursday.
Yeah, yeah.
Big announcement coming on Thursday if you're a regular listener to the show.
Absolutely. All right, coming up next, by the way, you can get that at stevemason.com. Click on subscribe for either iTunes or Spotify. And it's really good stuff. Coming up next, Aldin Gonzalez, Dodgers beat writer for ESPN, is going to join us. We're getting ready for, oh, by the way, it is William Howard Taft. Thank you.
What did you say?
Robert Taft.
Who is Robert Taft? Is somebody.
I think he was an actor. You're right. I think he was an actor. Aldin is coming up next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so tonight, it is what we have been waiting for. It is payback for 2017. I'm over-dramatizing it a little bit, but it is Dodgers-Astros tonight in Houston. And our guy who follows the Dodgers is ESPN's Aldin Gonzalez. He joins us now. Aldin, what's up, man?
Not much, guys. How you doing?
Good, Aldin. Hey, all right, so we're going to bounce around a little bit with you. Let me start here. Do you think someone on the Dodgers pitching staff will hit an Astro batter tonight? Will the Astros have a hit-by-pitch recorded in this game? And obviously I'm saying it because I think it will be like, hey, we haven't forgotten. Do you think that happens tonight?
Yeah, so this might be a surprising answer, but I don't think so.
Mason doesn't either.
And who knows what will happen, but and I keep going back to what Alex Wood said during spring training. And during spring training, I think the biggest source of anger among Dodger players, aside from the fact that they feel like they stole a championship from them, which is the main reason why they're so publicly upset, the biggest source of anger from what happened was that none of the players were punished, right?
Yeah.
And so Alex Wood made this point during spring training, and this was after Ross Stripling himself was not going to start in this series. He said that he would consider throwing at Astros hitters because he was so upset by what happened. Alex Wood made the point that you hit one of those Astros hitters, and because at that time Major League Baseball was watching that situation so closely, you would get suspended, which means that you would end up getting more punishment yourself than the team that committed a crime that some people believe might be the greatest crime in Major League Baseball since 100
good
years, since the Black Sox scandal. So with that as a backdrop, and given the fact that MLB will be watching this closely because of the history, I don't think so. And then you got to add in the fact that it's Walker Buehler pitching, then it's Dustin May, two guys who were not on the roster in 2017. I don't think the Dodgers need to hit an Astros player for the Astros to realize that they haven't forgotten. I think their words have said that enough.
Okay. Do you think there will be warnings from the umpires beforehand?
I don't think so. I think the warnings would come if somebody gets hit. I don't think we're going to see warnings beforehand because I think that would just sort of draw attention to the fact that this is a possibility. And you definitely don't want that as an umpiring crew either, though. You keep that in mind. Like, pitchers sometimes just like to pitch inside, right? And so if you sort of set warnings before the game, then all of a sudden you're going to have Dodgers pitchers, and that's an unfair situation for the Dodgers. They're going to have a situation where they want to throw a fastball up and in just because that's where they want to throw it.
Sure.
And they're going to be worried that it slips and they get thrown out of the game, and that's not right.
Okay, score 7-1. It's the eighth inning. Blake Treinen's on the mound. Dodgers are winning.
Maybe.
Jose Altuve's at the plate.
Maybe.
That's when I think we see it. That would be the scenario I could see it happen.
Or have Gratterall throw at him. Doesn't he throw like 100 miles an hour? He'll just say, it got away. It slipped.
Then that's a situation, though, with the season being so short and guys going on the COVID list or the injured list left and right. If you're the Dodgers, do you want to risk one of your relievers getting suspended for something like that would seem blatant from the outside?
Yeah, it's a fair question. We're talking to Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Dodgers for ESPN. Alden, is it something or nothing that the Dodgers are 2-2 after four games?
Not much. You know, you see this throughout an entire season of, you know, four-game series, and you'll split it with two bad teams. I will say that two of the games that they lost, it seemed like they very easily could have won those games, too.
Yep.
I would have said it did mean something because it's a 60-game season. If we were operating under just sort of the normal postseason premise, right? But because we're not, and because additional teams can make it in, I don't think it's a big deal at all.
Yeah, you mentioned those two games. The Saturday game, I thought they had at least four base running errors. And the Sunday game, they left the bases loaded in the eighth. And they had opportunities to win both of those games. So it's Walker Buehler tonight. Alex Wood hits the injured list. So in terms of rotation, it goes Buehler tonight, then Dustin May, an open slot, according to ESPN.com. Is that the spot where they would potentially throw Kershaw, is in that Friday game against Arizona?
I would think that that's a possibility. That's the first game when Kershaw is eligible to return from the IL. So to me, it would seem to make the most sense. He threw 15 pitches, I think it was, off a mound yesterday, and he was scheduled to throw off a mound again today. So it would actually end up just being ideal timing for the Dodgers. So that would be my presumption. And it would be perfect timing, too, with, you know, Alex Wood experiencing shoulder inflammation. You never know how these things could manifest itself.
Yep.
And, I mean, guys, really quickly, we're looking at a situation where the Dodgers are, and I know we talk about their depth all the time, and it's real, but the Dodgers are just sort of left and right missing pitchers. Alex Wood marks the fourth starting pitcher that they've seen sort of be unavailable, with David Price opting out. Jimmy Nelson had that season-ending back surgery a few weeks ago. and now Clayton Kershaw. So luckily for the Dodgers, it seems like Kershaw's latest back injury was not serious at all.
We're talking to Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Dodgers for ESPN. Alden, it came out over the weekend that Justin Verlander may be done for the year. The Astros are disputing that. Verlander's disputing it, saying that he could come back, but you know, most of the people we follow think that he could be done, especially in a short season. If he is done, does that knock the Astros out of contention to win the American League? Most people thought it was a two or three team race in the American League, Yankees and Astros right at the top. If Verlander's out, can the Astros still win the American League?
In a conventional sense, I would have said no, because their bullpen, because even though their bullpen's pretty good and the offense is obviously elite,
yep,
you look at just how much they relied on Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander last year. Either one of those two guys could have won the Cy Young Award. And now both of them being out, I would have said no. But in a 60-game season where eight teams are making it from each league and that first series is a best of three, and you have that offense and you still have a bullpen that's within maybe the top 10 at least in baseball, I'm not going to count them out. You see teams find starting pitching help from a bunch of different areas, especially when you're talking about a short sample size. Honestly, guys, I'm not counting any team out this year. Maybe except like the Baltimore Orioles or something like that.
I mean, you can count the Marlins out. You can count those four of the Marlins
Let's talk about the Miami Marlins. What are you hearing about the Marlins situation? Obviously, now 17 guys have tested positive in the traveling party. They won't play until at least Monday. What are you hearing about that situation? Rob Manfred seemed to try to calm things down yesterday.
I mean, and I know he was asked this specifically yesterday on MLB Network about whether or not this was a nightmare situation, and he dismissed it. This is sort of the beginning of a nightmare situation, because the Marlins are going to stay in Philadelphia for I don't know how long. And another situation that you have here is that whether or not the city of Miami is going to let the Marlins come back into their home city without having quarantined for 14 days, which I don't know if that's the strict protocol in the city of Miami or Miami-Dade County, but it's something that's been floated out there as well. And this is bigger than the Marlins, right? And you saw how an outbreak in one team can sort of spiderweb and affect so many teams. The Phillies have been affected, the Orioles, the Yankees, the Nationals, who are not going to be traveling to Miami this weekend because Major League Baseball is not letting them, but also because the players voted that they didn't want to go out to Miami. And it's just a reminder, guys, of how fragile this whole thing is. And it's why, even though there started to be a little bit of optimism as this second phase of spring training got underway and the positive cases were low, that was always met with the caveat that these guys are going to start traveling once the season begins. And once you start traveling, once you start spreading across America like that and getting on planes and staying in hotels and just being on the road, problems begin to manifest themselves. And it's got to be incredibly disheartening for Major League Baseball that although they probably figured that outbreaks like these were going to happen and they had protocols in place to protect against it, it's been 4 days, guys. Four days, and we already had the first outbreak, and that's the problem. And the disheartening thing for teams around the league is that they know that they could be fine one day, and this could happen to them too. And that's what makes you sort of so uneasy about watching these guys navigate a season right now.
Had this happened to the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Cubs or one of the marquee teams in Major League Baseball, would the reaction be different? In other words, would we be closer to a total shutdown of the sport if we lost one of the major market teams to all this COVID?
I don't know. I've thought about that, and I understand where that premise comes from. I still think that because Major League Baseball put so much effort into getting the season off the ground, and because there's so much financially at stake, I still think that they would try to move on with the season. The outcry would no doubt be louder, more widespread, but I still think that they would try to field the season just because, again, so much work has gone into this, and they really want to get, and I'm not trying to say that they're going to sacrifice overall public health to get to this.
Right.
There's a real motivation to play the postseason and get that sort of broadcast revenue from an expanded postseason in a season when owners have been complaining so much about the loss of revenue without fans and with less games. And that's the major motivation here. And my hope is that Major League Baseball is able to sort of make the right morality decision here to not sacrifice greater public health and put more people at risk just to get through the season.
Alden, great stuff, man. Thank you for doing this. I hope we get some fun tonight in Houston and maybe even some fireworks. I wouldn't mind these two teams yelling at each other a little bit and seeing what happens. So, hey, by the way, do you know why the first pitch is so late? It's an 8:10 first pitch in Houston. You know why?
8:10 local time in Houston?
Yeah, isn't it 6:10 here?
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that until you brought that to my
yeah,
attention.
I have no idea. My guess is TV's involved in some way, shape, or form, but that's a late start for a baseball game.
Yeah, usually that's why.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Alden, for doing this, man.
No problem, guys.
All right.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, man. By the way, Dave Roberts has just spoke to Bob Nightingale. He says, I still believe the results of 17 would have been different. Absolutely would have been.
Dave Roberts said that. All right. Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy Adrian Garcia Marquez is going to talk about the big LFC win last night. But coming up next, the Lakers open the season, the games that count, what we're calling the seeding games, on Thursday. When they do, will Anthony Davis be on the floor? We'll get into that coming up.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland, what is up? Hey, we want to thank you very much for being with us over the last, John, I actually counted it up. You know how many shows we've done from home?
I would say over 100.
We're at 95.
Wow.
95 days of Mason in Ireland from our own homes, and a lot of you guys stuck with us throughout, and we appreciate it, and now we're going to pay it off for you with games. We've got baseball. We've got the Lakers and Clippers starting on Thursday night, and John, there is Lakers news.
Anthony Davis. Okay, so here's the backstory. On Saturday in Orlando, the Lakers were playing a scrimmage against the Magic. And Anthony Davis was having a great first quarter. He had 12 points and 9 rebounds in the first quarter. But at the end of the quarter, he got poked in the eye. And they took him out for the rest of the game, and then they sat him for the final scrimmage yesterday, the one against the Wizards. Today, the Lakers practiced, but Anthony Davis did not. He was there on the sidelines wearing a pair of sunglasses. And listen to Frank Vogel after practice. He puts it out there that there's a possibility we will not see AD on Thursday night. Here's Vogel.
Well, he's day-to-day, and while he's still dealing with discomfort, there is some concern that he could potentially not play Thursday. But we're hopeful that he does, and we'll see how that plays out. You know, he's going to continue to be evaluated each day.
Now, Dave McMenamin came on with us, and Dave said that AD has made a point this year of showing his toughness, playing
yes.
through injuries. I'm not sure that Thursday night would necessarily be a case where you'd want him to do that. I don't know. Only Frank Vogel and the Laker trainers know his exact case. But, Mace, I would not be overly disappointed if they rested him, particularly if he's having any vision or eye issues at all. I think the number one priority is get AD and LeBron 100% for the playoffs.
Absolutely. Get the machine tuned up. Give J.R. Smith a little more run. Give Deion Waiters a little bit more run. Find out what these guys are capable of. And remember, the Lakers have essentially, can we say they've locked up, they haven't officially locked up the West, but they've essentially locked up the West.
Okay, so let me explain it to you this way. If the Clippers went 8-0, which is unlikely,
mm-hmm.
because the Clippers are not showing any urgency about these games, but let's say they do. They get hot and the Clippers go 8-0. The Lakers could go 3-5 and still win the West,
okay.
still be the number one seed. So it's very unlikely that there'll be anything other than the number one. Is it mathematically possible? Yes, but very unlikely. They're 5.5 games up with 8 to go. And so that's kind of what it comes down to, is that do you want to put those guys out there if they're anything less than 100%?
Right, right.
But as McManaman pointed out, AD's played through some injuries this season with great success.
Yep.
So, I was hoping that AD might say he was going to wear the James Worthy goggles to protect his eyes.
Yeah.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar James Worthy goggles. But
yep.
I'm making that up. I haven't heard that from anybody other than, probably Worthy.
Okay, let me throw something at you out of the box. The Emmy nominations came out today, and I feel especially badly for two actors.
Okay.
Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn.
Wait, neither one got nominated?
Neither one got nominated for Better Call Saul.
That's insane.
Yeah, I don't know how you don't nominate. First of all, I thought Ray Seahorn was fantastic in that show this year. And Bob Odenkirk deserves to win one of these things one of these years, and he got completely snubbed. I love Better Call Saul, love the show. I thought the show got screwed over today. Giancarlo Stanton did get nominated.
Not Giancarlo Stanton, Giancarlo Esposito.
No, yeah, you're right. Giancarlo Stanton was snubbed also.
Yeah.
He did not get a nomination. Giancarlo Esposito did, and the show got nominated. And by the way, the show that we love, Succession.
Yeah.
Here are the actors that got nominated. Matthew McFadden, who plays Tom.
Okay.
Kieran Culkin, who plays Roman. Nicholas Braun, who plays Greg. Sarah Snook, who plays Shiv. Brian Cox, who plays Logan. Jeremy Strong, who plays Kendall. The entire cast got nominated.
Wow.
The show of the moment, I think.
Of all of those guys, I think either Shiv or Kendall deserves it the most.
Really? See, I'm a big Roman guy. I think Kieran Culkin, he just makes me laugh a lot during that show.
He does kind of steal every scene he's in.
Yeah, he's really, really funny.
The guy who plays Kendall has, think about all the stuff he went through.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and in the last episode, he's got that moment at the press conference in the last episode. I mean, the whole cat. I mean, I think Succession will probably win everything, but I feel badly for Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn because I think both of them should have been nominated.
Did you guys see what else got nominated today?
No.
Tiger King, 6 nominations.
What?
6 nominations for Tiger King.
Please.
Best supporting husband killer, Carol Baskin.
Worst idea ever. Yeah,
six nominations for Tiger King. The sensation becomes a star at the Emmys.
Was it Frank Vogel or Stan Kasten who said, "Those are 8 hours of my life I'll never get back"? I can't remember what. Somebody,
you know what I say? They did watch,
right? But they were mad that they did.
You watched, right?
Yes, but like I said, those are 8 hours of my life I'll never get back.
There's not really a show going right now. Like we had Last Dance, we had Tiger King. What's the show of the minute? What are people actually watching right now that's great?
Well, nothing's in production.
But there's still shows coming out.
I watched Palm Springs the other day. Have you seen that yet?
No. Did you like it?
Give it a B.
A B.
Yeah, people are ranting and raving.
I heard it has nothing to do with Palm Springs. Is that true?
That is correct.
What?
It is Groundhog Day on steroids.
Okay.
Is how I would describe it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not. Everybody watched Hamilton. That was a gigantic thing. Right now, I'm watching Perry Mason, but I don't know if everybody's watching Perry Mason.
I'm watching it. It's really good.
Do you like it?
I love it. Really good.
It's some dark stuff. It is dark. Matthew Rhys is fantastic. But, yeah, it's dark. Have you checked it out, John?
Yeah, I gave it about 20 minutes. It didn't take with me.
20 minutes is not a fair sample.
But I will say this. I liked Tatiana Maslany so much in Network that I'll probably try it again.
She's really good in it. She's really weird in it. It's a weird character. And, by the way, Schitt's Creek is going to win all the awards on the comedy side, and deservedly so.
Yeah, it was great.
Did you watch Schitt's Creek?
All of it. Yeah.
You did.
Oh, yeah. And
when did you sneak that in? Because for a while I mentioned it and you were like, yeah. No.
I watched the whole thing. And Lisa, my wife, has decided that she wants Dan Levy to be her gay best friend.
He'd be a great gay best friend.
Yeah.
He'd be an excellent gay best friend. No question about it.
Yeah, he was great.
All right. Coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. It's Funch Day. Funch is in charge of the show. Linza will be back on Thursday, but in the meantime, Funch is going to give us Radio Tinder next. Mesa and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, it's time for Radio Tinder. Normally, Lindsay would do this. She'll be back on Thursday. She's off on vacation right now, and Funch is filling in. It's always Funch Day when Funch is at the controls.
Funch Day.
And Funch, Radio Tinder, what do you got?
All right, from employee to employer, could be the case for KG. As reports go that Kevin Garnett could be one of the guys in the many groups that are trying to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves, as they just put a for sale sign on them last week. Current owner Glenn Taylor bought the team in 1988 for $88 million and is asking for $1.2 billion for the team. Now, KG is rumored to be part of a group in which he will invest $200 million, and if his group wins the bid, KG will be the new head of basketball operations in Minnesota. So the kid, Kevin Garnett, has a NBA owner and executive. Swipe left or swipe right?
It rarely works, as you've kind of learned with Derek Jeter. Just because you were a great player doesn't mean you're going to be a great owner executive. Michael Jordan might be the worst owner in the NBA.
Yeah, worst. Derek Jeter, terrible.
But having said that, Mace, it's not really fair to paint all those guys with a broad brush.
Correct.
That to say, because Michael Jordan is a bad owner and Derek Jeter is a bad owner, that Kevin Garnett would necessarily be a bad owner. But Minnesota needs something because, well, you know, when I looked at that team a few years ago, I figured, okay, you got Andrew Wiggins,
yep,
you got Karl Anthony Towns, and you got Jimmy Butler. This team is going to be a top four team in the West, and I think the best they ever did was eighth. So yeah, they need something.
Well, I'm in favor of this. I'm in favor of opportunities for people of color to own professional sports franchises. This is one of those. Now, ownership is different from running basketball operations. Basketball operations is a different skill set. And I'm not sure, I mean, Kevin Garnett could be a genius. He could walk in and be a genius at it. But it's one of those jobs that does require some experience. Very few people walk into a basketball operations job and take over as president. Normally they work themselves up. But yeah, KG may be the exception to the rule. I'm all in favor of him being part of that group that buys the T-Wolves.
And it's kind of a sad story because the reason why KG's number is not retired, they say, because of Glenn Taylor.
Right. They had a falling out when KG was traded to the Celtics.
That is so petty.
Yeah, he wanted to come back, and I think he actually did come back and play 1 year at the end of his career, and the plan was to move him.
Yeah, it was the last Flip Saunders year.
Yeah, it was to move him into some type of ownership role, and it just didn't happen. It's the same thing that happened with Jordan and the Wizards. Let's see how that plays out. That'll be interesting. There's a guy named Gerson Rosas, who is their GM now, that if KG gets control of this, he should keep Rosas. Rosas, Mace, was Daryl Morey's right hand in Houston. So he's like Daryl Morey Jr., and he's really smart and really forward-thinking. And if Garnett gets the team, he should keep Rosas and have him do all those head of basketball operations things that you were talking about.
So right.
Let's see how it plays out.
All right, guys. So I don't know if you guys know, but we as a country are experiencing a nationwide chain shortage because of the pandemic.
A what shortage?
A chain shortage.
Coin shortage.
Yeah. And if you've been to restaurants for carryout or whatever, recently you might see a sign that basically says the nation is having a coin shortage. So if we can't give you all of your change, don't hate us, basically. Now, the Federal Reserve says the coin shortage is due to the partial close of the economy during quarantine. And then if you just read the news recently, you see stories of people cashing in change at the banks for thousands of dollars. And I just read one guy turn in change he collected for 20 years to help with the change shortage. And I think he cashed out to like $6,000 or something.
Wow.
Now, should we all turn into coin collectors to help out the economy? Swipe left or swipe right?
I'm swiping left. I don't keep coins. If somebody gives me a coin, it goes to the next homeless guy. I just want no part of coins. I live on my Apple Pay. I live on my credit cards. I rarely carry cash. Most everything goes either Apple Pay or credit cards. I don't need change.
You rarely carry cash?
Rarely carry cash.
How do you tip people?
Well, who do I need to tip on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, during the pandemic, probably nobody.
But I mean, even when I'm at my normal day, who do I need to tip? I mean, I tip the girls at the coffee shop on the card.
On the card you do it?
Yeah.
How do you tip the pizza delivery guy?
On the card? Same thing. Uh-huh. You build the delivery into it. You pay the tip right on the app.
Yeah, I always wonder if the actual person gets the tip when you do that. Or if the company gets it. You know what I mean?
See, I always tip really good for delivery guys, whether it's Grubhub or Postmates or one of those, because I know
if I tip well, the food will get here fast and it will be very organized. Nope. And it will, the order will be right.
No coins in a car for any of you guys?
Yeah, I None. Keep it in the car for parking meters.
Yeah, me too. You too.
Parking meters, I use my credit card. They take credit cards now.
Okay, but it, you know that in certain cities, like Hermosa Beach, they have the old school meters, and you have to have coins or you're screwed.
Okay, sorry, Hermosa Beach. I'm not coming your way anytime soon.
Oh, by the way, Funch, let me make a correction from two subjects ago because I've gotten a couple of tweets about it. I said, and Mace, you tended to agree that Michael Jordan was, arguably the worst owner in the NBA. As long as James Dolan's in the NBA,
correct,
Jordan
yeah.
cannot sink to anything. He can only be second worst.
Well, Jordan's the worst talent evaluator, I'd say.
Right. Yeah, that's probably true.
All right, so The Observer wrote a piece on the 20th anniversary of the movie X-Men, where they interviewed some producers and writers on the film. The subject of casting was in the article, as they said, a who's who either wanted a part in the movie or passed on it. Now, okay. Starting with Professor X, they said that Patrick Stewart didn't want the part at all, and it took him a long time to convince him to do it.
He's great. He's great. He's the Professor best. X, yeah.
Now, you guys will be shocked on who wanted to play Professor X. Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, wanted to play Charles Xavier. Now, also, Mariah Carey wanted the role of Storm, which went to Halle Berry.
What a nightmare casting that would be.
And Russell Crowe and Viggo Mortensen passed on an iconic Wolverine role that went to Hugh Jackman.
Well, they definitely got the right guy for Wolverine.
And also, Shaq showed up at the offices one day and wanted to play a mutant named Forge that wasn't even in a film. So a lot of people wanted to be in a movie, you know, even though it wasn't even out yet. So King of Pop, Michael Jackson as Professor X and other celebrities missing out on an X-Men franchise, swipe left or swipe right.
I think they got it right. I'm having trouble. I know I saw that movie, but I don't remember all the details of it.
Oh, X-Men is great.
I thought the casting was good, wasn't it?
Oh, the X-Men. Yeah, the X-Men, the original one was fantastic. I thought it was a great cast. It was, and here's a little something about the X-Men that probably most people don't know. Is that, so when I went through all my comic books, and I've got a bunch of comic books from when I was a little kid. I had all these X-Men comic books, like tons of them. And reading about X-Men, I always wonder what drew me to them. The X-Men are essentially people who feel different from everybody else. And so the X-Men is a weird sort of allegory about being gay. And I think that's why I love the X-Men so much. It was about those kids and those people who felt like they were different from everybody else. So I think that's why I bought all those X-Men comic books, even though I had no idea, you know, why I was doing it. I just liked the X-Men.
Yeah, casting what-ifs are really fun because almost every movie has some, for example, you know, I love the movie Almost Famous.
Yep.
Did you guys know that the role in Almost Famous, the lead guitar player of Stillwater, Russell Hammond, for the first 3 months of that movie was Brad Pitt.
Wow.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and Brad Pitt dropped out.
Wow.
And then they got Billy Crudup to come in and do it. And the role that Kate Hudson ended up playing, which changed her career, Penny Lane, Kate Hudson was originally hired to play William's sister, the role that Zooey Deschanel ended up with. But when they couldn't get Penny Lane cast the way they wanted to, people kept dropping out, including Natalie Portman. And they said, well, let's try Kate Hudson, and she nailed it.
Yeah, she did. It's a great movie.
Another one I can think of is Christopher Walken went out for the role of Han Solo in Star Wars.
Is that right?
Yeah, and there's actually a screen test if you look for it on YouTube.
You know what? I also heard that Burt Reynolds turned down the role of Han Solo.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I cannot imagine him being Han Solo at all.
Yeah, you'd be surprised at how many roles have been turned down by people that went on to be like monster characters. Well, Mace, you know my buddy Richard Schiff, who won a couple of Emmys playing Toby Ziegler in The West Wing. That role came down. Richard told me that role came down to him and Eugene Levy.
Wow!
And it was a coin flip between who got it, and they went with Richard, and he turned in it. But he said that Eugene Levy had a great screen test for. You know, Eugene Levy's looked at it at now as a comedic actor, and you know, it was so great on Schitt's Creek and everything else he's been in. But he was almost Toby Ziegler in The West Wing.
Wow. By the way, Burt Reynolds, just to follow up, also turned down playing James Bond.
Did he really?
Yeah. After Sean Connery
retired. Can you imagine him
with
a British accent?
Yeah. See, that's the problem. He thought nobody would accept an American playing Bond, but, I mean, the man could have learned an accent. They learn our accent all the time.
Yeah.
We always are so impressed when a British person can do an American accent. And the reverse isn't always true. So, yeah, but Burt Reynolds turned down Bond and Han Solo.
All right,
what a different career.
Yeah. Speaking of accents, our buddy Adrian Garcia Marquez is on deck. Adrian, the Spanish voice of almost everything. Matter of fact, he just got the job as the new play-by-play guy for the Chargers on Spanish radio. But we're having him on to talk LAFC, and Adrian's coming up next.
Yeah, he does pre- and post-game for us here at 710. LAFC won a big one last night. We'll talk to Adrian Garcia Marquez next. By the way, I want to pass this along because I was texting with Bob Nightingale. There was a report from a guy at a station called 93.7 The Fan that the Marlins went out on the town in Atlanta. Bob Nightingale tweeted or texted me back. I heard at least one guy went out, but it could have been out to eat for all I know, but definitely left the hotel.
Okay,
so not at all what Bob reported.
Eventually that's going to come out because, again, every team has been getting tested, and all 29 teams tested negative. Not one positive test. The Marlins, 18 positive tests. So something happened, and I think it'll probably come out.
Yep. All right. Coming up next for you, Adrian Garcia Marquez, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.